Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm Joe Casey. And we've just returned from a trip to Boston for our granddaughter's second birthday. And that made me realize two things. First, I now have twice as much experience as a grandparent as I did 1 year ago today. And second, I'm sure I have a tremendous amount left to learn. So in my quest to learn more about grandparenting, we'll be talking today with Ted Page. He's the creator and editor of the blog and website Good Grandpa, Nurturing the Next Generation. And it was created after Ted became a grandfather of 55 and looked online for information on being a grandfather and found, well, not much at all. When I did a search, I discovered Ted Page. I saw him first in an article in the New York Times, How to Be a Better Grandfather. You'll find a link to it in the show notes. And that led me to his website. You'll also find a link to that in the show notes as well. Ted Page is one of the co-founders of Captains of Industry, a creative marketing consultancy, and today serves as kind of a master chef to ensure that the agency's creative storytelling is up to its high standards. He brings over 25 years' experience to the task, guiding the creation of brands and content marketing campaigns for clients ranging from First Wind to the MIT Sloan School of Management. Ted wrote the script for the Institute for Backup Trauma, starring John Cleese, featured by the Content Marketing Institute as the first viral B2B campaign. He's the author of the top-ranked ebook, Branding and Marketing for Renewable Energy Companies. In addition, he wrote the Climate Declaration for CERES, which was signed by over 1,400 corporations, including Nike, Levi's, Apple, Starbucks, and GM. Ted lectures on marketing at top business schools and at conferences globally. His nonfiction stories have appeared in Boston Magazine and the Boston Sunday Globe Magazine, both of which I read religiously still. And his book of stories, The Willoughby Chronicles, published by Three Swallies Press. Ted, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Exciting to have a conversation and talk to a fellow UMass grad.
I'm just thinking about the times I probably crossed paths with you in the hallway in Orchard Hill.
That's right. I was the 6'6" guy with the trombone. So you probably would have picked me out of a crowd.
I was very distracted back then. So don't take it personally.
Sure.
So before we talk about grandparenting, could you tell us about the professional work you do?
Yes. I started my career as a copywriter in New York at the McCann Erickson Advertising Agency. And moved back to New England when our first child was born in the 1980s. And I'd always found that the best ads I did at McCann Erickson were never actually shared with the client because they were deemed to be too risky or a little bit on the edge or what have you. So I started my own marketing agency called Captains of Industry, which I like to say is the most humble name in marketing. It really describes our clients. So who are the captains of industry of today, who are creating world-changing products and doing different things. And so I've been running this content marketing agency for probably since about the year 2001. And we got into early days of web content, you know, viral video with movie stars and built out from there doing branding and content for a lot of clean energy companies. I've done a lot of work with clients in the renewable energy and climate change space and technology. So that background was definitely helpful when I became a grandfather and wanted to start sharing my experiences with the world.
So with four grandchildren, you're a veteran now, but could you take us back and tell us about the time when you first became a grandparent?
Yeah, it was about 9 years ago now. Our daughter, a very, very crafty girl, she slipped us the Valentine's Day card, and inside was the sonogram. And suddenly my life changed in a way that I did not anticipate, even though I should have. She'd been married for 3 years. I was only 55 years old at the time. And I just felt like this massive boulder of emotion striking my chest. And I hugged my wife. I hugged my in-laws. I think I hugged the cat. And I cried like a baby. And it was really, for me, a life-changing experience. And I found that it was so kind of transformative, this new chapter, that I just started writing chapters about this. And I've always been a writer and a creative director, you know, in my job. So I just started writing about my experiences and trying to learn, how do I navigate this new world? And I remember going on the web, doing the Google search and about grandfathering, because my father, who was a terrific grandfather to my kids, you know, he was no longer with us. I didn't have anyone to ask advice from, so I looked, and the only things that came up in my search were related to the movie Bad Grandpa, and sort of the senile, lecherous drunk was not really my role model, what I aspired to. So I named my blog Good Grandpa and just started writing about experiences, and just started slow and kind of gradually built from there. So for me, it was not only kind of a life change, but also a way to, you know, express myself and connect with other grandfathers who are having similar experience.
So tell us about the mission behind your blog and your website.
The mission of the blog is to nurture the next great generation. So I'm a boomer, sort of the tail end of the baby boomers, born in 1959. And for us, we always just kind of looked up to our parents as what Tom Brokaw had dubbed the greatest generation. He wrote this terrific book, The Greatest Generation. And that's kind of very understandable. I mean, they won World War II. They survived the Great Depression. They were great. They were fantastic. And I revered my father and mother. I revered the one grandfather that I knew. When I saw these little kids starting to appear on the scene, our grandkids, I thought, what if they're going to be the greatest generation of all time? And what can we do to help them become the greatest generation, not just here in the United States, but around the world? Because we have tools that our parents didn't have. We have the internet. We have ways to share our stories and wisdom. And maybe we've learned some things. So that's the mission of it. And I say that, I know it sounds very high-minded. I'm known by some of my grandchildren as the one who gives them chocolate for breakfast. So that, and also I'm called the tickle monster for all of the obvious reasons. I'm very good at the tickling and the spoiling part, but I have this mission, which I'm hearing more and more people, more and more grandfathers I'm talking to are responding to, and including, by the way, Tom Brokaw, who wrote The Greatest Generation, through the New York Times reporter who very nicely included me in a story in the New York Times. She happened to know Tom Brokaw's daughter, so I interviewed Tom Brokaw for this, and I did put that question to him. Like, do we need a war? Do we need an existential global crisis in order to rise to this occasion? And for these kids, the ones who were on tricycles and pushing soggy Cheerios around their tray, how did they become the greatest? And he said, every generation has its challenges, and it's not that these kids won't have hurdles and obstacles in their life. It's how they learn from them and how we can support them in that learning in order to become great. So that was kind of one of the early parts of the journey of what's now becoming a book for a publisher is collecting and gathering of wisdom that we can then share in ways that haven't been done before.
And I know you mentioned that you're interested in hearing from other grandfathers for the book, but you're not the only source of wisdom and experience on this.
Absolutely. There's a contact page on the Good Grandpa blog, the blog for grandfathers. And that is, as I'm working on this book, that's the most wonderful thing, is to hear from grandfathers who have a story, something to share. And because this is not about me, I'm not a better grandpa than anybody else. It's not about that. At its best, this is a community of people who have stories to share and tell. And what I hear just absolutely blows me away. Like, because I always love family stories. I love family history. I was talking with a guy who's a grandfather here in Massachusetts, and he's got 4 grandkids. And his father was one of the boys in the boat. You familiar with the book, The Boys in the Boat? So this guy, his name is Fred Schock. His father was an alternate on the Boys in the Boat team that was at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, Germany. And he's just telling me these stories, right? And that's like a springboard into what do we do for his grandkids and my grandkids, right? So it's the Olympics. It's this kind of heroic perception. And what do we learn from these stories? And he's talking about his dad and what he learned about rowing, talked about his grandfather. And I always ask grandfathers that I talk to, I always get to this point, which is, what's the number one thing? Have you ever seen the movie City Slickers with Billy Crystal?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the Jack Palance character, you know, this kind of diehard cowboy says, you know, there's lots of things, but, you know, what's the number one thing? So in everything, all my conversations with grandfathers, including Fred Schock, you know, son of Olympic rower, what's the number one piece of wisdom that you want to impart? And I hear just fascinating things. I hear differences. I hear commonalities. But the idea of bringing together dozens and dozens of number one pieces of wisdom, right? And the open question is, does it become one overarching idea, or is it a mosaic that paints this picture that we can learn from? And one thing I hear from a lot of grandfathers is, I'm going to tell you something I wish I knew 30 years ago, right? I'm going to tell you this wisdom. I wish I'd known this because I would have lived my life differently. These are men typically in 60s, 70s, 80s, sometimes 90s. And that's a really fascinating thing because this in this way hasn't been done before. So it's almost like a treasure hunt of that's creating a compendium of wisdom. And I found this from my blog because I study the blog traffic and the Google Analytics, which is that, yes, grandparents are an audience for this, the biggest audience, but I think the biggest audience is younger people who want to live their best lives, right? So it's people in their 30s, 40s, maybe 50s. They're not grandparents, but who wouldn't want to know those things that will help you live and be kind to others and create a better world when you're 25. These kids really need this, right? And that's what's exciting to me. That's what gets me up in the morning. And because I get up at 5 and then I write from like 6:30 a.m. to 9, and then I work on client work. But this is just a really exciting project. I love hearing from grandfathers. So long story short, if anyone listening to this, if you know a grandfather who would love to talk with me, folks with different backgrounds, I am all ears because that's the only way that I could write something that's halfway decent.
And you'll find links in the show notes to the website and more information that you can get in touch with Ted with. And you mentioned, first of all, Tickle Monster. I thought I was the only one. I knew I should have copyrighted it, but now I know there's two of us out there. So that's good to know. And our granddaughter on her second birthday party came up with a new thing. She said, I'm going to tickle the Tickle Monster, which she used a feather to do. So that was, she said, that's really funny. I said, that's good trick. So on my way back from her birthday weekend, I read an article in the New York Times talking about what we can all learn as older adults from two-year-olds. And the fact that they laugh 6 times more than we do. They really have a sense of wonder, a sense of play. And I was curious about what have you learned about from your 4 grandchildren that you use today as as a grown-up person?
A couple of things jump out. One, I should mention that the first thing that Tom Brokaw told me when I interviewed him was, I learn more from my grandkids than they learn from me. That's hearing from a man who won the Presidential Medal of Freedom, every possible award you can think of in journalism, a man who is a witness to history, spoke at D-Day veterans at the Normandy celebration. This is a man who's learned a lot. So what he learned from his grandkids is central to his thinking. And what he learned from them. One thing is, and I totally agree on the sense of wonder, I went to a production of Beauty and the Beast at a local middle school here in Lexington, Massachusetts, with my son and our two granddaughters. And if we're lucky, we've been to Broadway shows, right? We go and we see Hamilton or Les Mis or whatever it is, and highly professional, fantastic productions. To see a three-year-old, my three-year-old granddaughter, with this look of absolute wonder on her face, looking at these middle schoolers singing this Disney production, this was the greatest show in the world. It was absolute sense of wonder. This is a girl who's wearing, by the way, the sneakers that light up if you know, when they walk. And she has like this absolute fascination with the movie Frozen, like a lot of kids. She is like Elsa in the movie Frozen. And the look of wonder on her face and the look of wonder on her sister's face gave me a sense of wonder, right? To be three again. When you're 64 and you can be three again, like that's a terrific learning experience, right? I'd rather do that than be on Broadway. And the other thing I would say is, because kids have less vocabulary, the way they express themselves can be absolutely wonderful. I remember when my daughter was little, she said to me, we were in Vermont at the time, and she said, you know, Dad, mooses can't talk. They just wiggle, right? Now, just unpack that sentence a little bit there, you know? If you look at, and I think of this as a writer, if you look at language with fresh eyes, then you can come up with very, very creative ways of expressing yourself, because you're not just following into the usual things you learn as a writer when you're in high school or in your 30s, 40s, and 50s. If you think like a three-year-old or a two-year-old, you can come up with fantastic sentences that are just so creative.
So you mentioned wisdom before, and in reading your blog, reading the website, there's a lot of wisdom on there. And perhaps the most valuable wisdom is distilled wisdom. And I saw two examples that really stood out to me. Because I watched Monty Python's The Holy Grail 8 times, the summer it came out, I almost said in the theaters, but that's the only place we could get things like that back then. Could you first tell us about John Cleese and what you learned from him?
Well, John is just a wonderful, wonderful guy. I first met John at the stage door of a live show of Monty Python in 1976 at the City Center in New York. And that was the first time I had spoken to him. And then, you know, I was just had stars in my eyes, just like my comedy god. Like I'd never laughed so hard in my life. And then kind of flash forward, it was around the year 2007, I was approached to write a script starring John Cleese for a business video. This was in the days of like the viral video. So we cast John in a script for production called the Institute for Backup Trauma. It was for a client that made disk-based backup for corporate data versus unreliable tape-based. So he was a doctor ahead of this institute of people who'd lost their minds because they'd lost their data. And of course, I wrote myself a little scene where I was in the background with John, which I will brag about until I die. But he was just so kind and gracious, so just a wonderful person to work with. And it was a hit at the time. It broke the servers. So we did about 3 productions with him and then just stayed in touch. And a few months ago, he was in town, did a stage show with his daughter up in Lowell, Massachusetts. So we just got together for lunch and had a fascinating 2-hour lunch. And we don't dwell too much on Python when we get together, but he did throw out that, you know, the parrot sketch, the classic, you know, he brings in like a dead parrot to the pet shop. He said, you know, we knew we couldn't have a dead dog or a cat because people are quite fond of them, you know, but everybody hates a parrot. So there were little things like that. But then, of course, I said, well, John, you know, let me tell you what I'm up to. I'm writing this book and I'm, you know, gathering wisdom from elders and I ask everyone what the number one piece of wisdom is. And he just jumped in and he said, well, that's easy. I'll tell you. It's like, great. Mr. John Cleese, one of the greats, is going to share his number one thing. And he says, it's more important to find the truth than it is to know the truth. And when I asked him to unpack that a little bit, he said, well, Newtonian mathematics and physics was accepted without question for hundreds of years. And then along comes Einstein, and it's all upended. And then just within Einstein's life, there's quantum physics, and it's the constant learning that matters. It's the seeking the truth. And sometimes when you believe you know the truth, it blocks you off from continuous learning and exploration. That conversation with John was kind of back-to-back with, you know, interview with Tom Brokaw at the early stages of writing this book, which is not coming out till a little bit later in 2025. But my process changed for writing the book because it's about seeking. It's about the learning versus my saying, look, here's the truth. Because we can all find our own truth in this, the one that matters most to us. And I heard someone say, if someone is playing chess, there is no right move, right? It depends on where you are at in the chessboard. It's where you are at in the game. So we're all in our lives at different points in our lives. So the wisdom that matters to us is going to matter to where we are in life. Because the right move for someone when they're 20 is might be very different from where they are on the chessboard when they're 55 or 75. But I think that idea of finding the truth. So I'm in this quest to find the best truth I can and try to talk to Native American grandfathers, you know, African American grandfathers, just a full spectrum. Folks like Bob Halperin, who shared with me something which ended up being in the blog called Letters from Saba. It's the forever letter that you write letters to your grandkids that they can open later in their lives, things like that. So I'm inviting grandfathers and grandmothers and others to be with me on this journey through the blog as I learn and to throw in their own ideas.
The other example that stood out to me was from your Aunt Lois. Tell us a little bit about her and what advice did she give you?
So my Aunt Lois was my mother's sister, and she lived to be about 95 years old. She was a cellist. She was a music teacher in Vermont in her career. And she became, you know, a grandmother and then a great-grandmother to a whole boatload of kids, wonderful kids. And after my mother passed away and my father, she was the last one standing, if you will, of that older generation of my family. And she was quite frail at the time. We were up in Vermont at the old family farm, which is still in the family, along the shores of Lake Willoughby, we call it the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. And we were down in the water by the beach, and I had just found out I was going to be a grandfather. So just in passing, you know, talking to Lois, who's wearing this, as I recall, these big pink sort of Jackie Onassis sunglasses. I said, Lois, how can I be a better grandfather? And she didn't skip a beat. She just said, be there for them. And it's interesting you used the word distilled wisdom earlier, because I was thinking, that's just the first part of what she's going to tell me, right? There's going to be this whole speech after this. And I kept waiting. And she, I said, be there for them. And because a lot of times the people who have the best wisdom say it in fewer words. So what she said had a lot packed into it. And I've learned a lot since then about how being there for them in different ways is kind of a foundational principle. And then because you have to be there for them in order to impart wisdom and tell your stories and all these other things. So that be there for them is kind of the roots of the tree. And then there's the trunk, and then all of the leaves are the individual kinds of wisdom and love and things that we can share with our kids. But I owe a gratitude to Aunt Lois and to all the grandmothers out there, because it's one thing to hear something. It's another thing to actually listen. And I hope that everyone has a chance to listen to Aunt Lois.
Indeed. And I learned on your site that we wouldn't be having this conversation today if it wasn't for a switched flight. What happened?
So this was a story that my dad told me, true story, and I didn't know the full story until later in his life. The backstory is that my dad was a World War II veteran in the Navy. He didn't talk about his war experiences much. He was a radar officer in a ship in the Pacific. He was dive bombed by kamikazes at the Battle of Okinawa for a week. He had horrible PTSD and we never knew it. And he felt very guilty about the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which was relatively rare, I think, for a Navy veteran or any kind of U.S. veteran, but less rare than I would have thought. In any case, Dad used to take me and my four brothers on hikes up Mount Washington every year in New Hampshire. It's the tallest mountain in New Hampshire. So we'd hike up, and then he would give us the speech. It was the same speech every year, and he talked about the need for world peace, the need to continuously strive to find ways to prevent war. Thought war was the stupidest thing he ever saw, ever heard of. Terrible waste of resources in human life. And it wasn't until the last trip up Mount Washington, and it was just me and my brother John, and Dad was getting on in years, so we actually took the cog railway up to the top, and we were at the top, and Dad, you know, he jumps right into talking about just the speech again, and it's the whole scene was like something from Shakespeare, because it's like mist going over the rocks, and the wind, and the, you know, and Dad's hair blowing in the wind. Like, I'm not making this up. Like, this is what it was like. And then he says, there's one more thing, Ted, I'm going to tell you. And he tells us a story of when it was 1956, and he was at an airport in Los Angeles, and he was going to be heading back to Boston after a scientific conference. And this woman, who was a stranger, just came up to him at the counter and said, excuse me, sir, you appear to be booked on the earlier flight back to Boston. I'm really trying to get home to my family, and I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to switch seats with me. So my dad, who was a real gentleman, and he would never say no to something like that. He wasn't in a hurry in his life, put it that way. So he switched seats, and what happened was the plane that he was going to be on, the plane that this woman was on, it collided with another plane over the Grand Canyon, and everyone on both planes died. It was the worst civil air disaster that ever occurred in the United States. So Dad told us this, you know, at the top of Mount Washington. I'm just kind of blown away. I was like, why am I only hearing this now in my life? We get to the bottom of the mountain later in the day, and Dad looks at me and he says, and the moral of the story is, if someone asks you for a favor, do it. So that kind of that spirit is, I'm trying to include that in the book, that, you know, life is a gift. It's like there's chance, there's kindness, and we only have so much time on this world. We only have so many grains of sand in our own personal hourglass, but it's through sometimes these random acts of kindness that we're here. So that thinking was one of the reasons why I was very happy to work with a publisher who was publishing my book. It's Regalo Press, and the woman's worked with some terrific people, who's Gretchen Young, who's the publisher. But they also, they make a donation to a nonprofit when the book comes out. So it's a more philanthropic business model. It's like, I can't just write a book. I've got to repay the debt, right? There's something, someone's got to benefit from this other than me. So I'm trying to find the right charity. It'd probably be a charity that benefits children around the world. So maybe that will go part way towards paying the debt of this, the woman who's like this guardian that I never met.
And it sounds like people will benefit greatly by the wisdom you're collecting from other grandparents as well. But I'm also curious about your wisdom. And I was wondering, what advice would you give to people who are listening, who are becoming grandparents for the first time?
Well, one thing I would say is take a deep breath and be thankful that any of this is happening and thankful that you have the kids that you do. Because it's all about the relationship you have with your kids. And one grandfather I spoke with, you know, he thinks of this as like parenting 2.0. But there's a lot we can learn from when we were parents that we can help our kids and guide them. But I think it's an opportunity to just sit back and be especially grateful for your kids, and also to take some time to thank your wife or thank your husband for being a good parent, because the little ones, they're lucky that they have the parents that you raised. And I think it's an opportunity to kind of take stock of your life, understand what you did well, and just experience this sense of happiness and joy. This is a rare thing in life. We're incredibly lucky. And so that would be my number one thing, is just enjoy it to the max, but be thankful for the people who are part of your life who help make it happen.
Indeed. And Ted, you mentioned the book. Tell us a little bit more about the book you're writing and when people should look for it.
The book, the working title is just based on blogs. So it's called Good Grandpa. The subtitle is Nurturing the Next Great Generation. And it's a work in progress. I have until the end of this year to get the manuscript in. And then be about 9 months after that before it comes out. So probably before the holidays of 2025. But I'm trying to connect with more grandfathers in, you know, from different cultural backgrounds. My hometown happens to have a very vibrant Chinese American community. So I've reached out to them. I want to hear more about the Chinese grandparenting experience. There's an organization in Italy called NAMI 2.0, which, I mean, they're way ahead of us, right? They have a whole organization that's dedicated to celebrating and promoting the role of grandparents in Italy. So we're just trying to make more connections to write something that's really substantial. And I have this year to do it right. And hopefully I have a lot more good conversations with people. And the book will include a whole series of chapters. For example, this one on, you know, overcoming your own personal challenges in life. Because as we get older, sometimes we have physical challenges. How do we adapt? How do we carry on? There's a chapter called The Profitable Lemonade Stand. Like, how do we teach entrepreneurship to 9-year-olds? But the general framework is, it's all storytelling. It's not an advice book per se, but there's learning to be had, you know, through the stories. And through that, I think I'm hoping that people get a lot out of it, whether they're grandparents or, you know, younger people. As I said before, like, how do you live a life? And also, if it sells 10 copies, I'd be happy, honestly, because I'll give another 10 to my family. And I already make a living. That's not what this is about. This is a total labor of love. And if it helps people, then I've accomplished something. I really believe it's possible for today's 3-year-olds and the 10-year-olds to be the greatest generation. We can do this. Like, just look at the United States. Just in our lifetime, we managed to get to the moon. We have decoded human DNA. there are miracles happening in the world of medicine right now. And when we apply ourselves, we can solve incredibly complex problems. And we should not give up on the great goals, right? Like, these kids can be the greatest. And we need to really define all the different ways that they can overcome the problems of past generations, whether it's disease or war, poverty, famine. It's one of those goals that's impossible, right? But our parents and our grandparents, they did not back down from tackling impossible things. And I think it's time.
Absolutely. Great messages. Look forward to the book. Hope you'll come back to talk with us when it comes out. And I know it'll help many people.
If anyone wants to, I got to be careful what I offer. I got to work with the publisher on this, but anyone who subscribes on the mailing list and the blog, I'm going to do whatever I can to provide a discount on the book and signed copies, whatever it takes. So if they go to goodgrandpa.com or just look up Blog for Grandfathers, Google Blog for Grandfathers, you'll find it. But if you sign up, I encourage folks to get involved, reach out to me. My email is there. And let's just have a conversation about this, because I want to make it happen.
And you'll find a link to the blog and website in the show notes. Ted, thank you so much for making the time. Great conversation, and really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And we appreciate you having me on.
Time for our takeaway segment, actionable ideas you can take with you following today's conversation with Ted Page. Number one, keep learning. Since you're listening to this podcast, I know this is already on the top of your list, but it's a good thing to keep in mind because you're also a role model. By continuing to learn new things after you retire, you set an important example. And I think it's especially important to cultivate that love of learning in children, not only in the school setting, but on their own, to always take the initiative to keep learning new things. This may sound obvious, but you'd be surprised how many people actually stop learning and don't take the initiative to learn new things, and that comes across to others. Number two, be there for them. I think that is great advice, and it stands on its own. As Ted said, there's a lot embedded in that message from his Aunt Lois, but there's a lot of wisdom in being there for them. Number three, if someone asks you for a favor, do it. Such an unforgettable story from Ted's father, but it underscores that you really don't know always the implications of a favor. It may seem like a small thing or an inconvenience to you, but could make a huge difference in the life of someone else. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can browse all of our episodes at our website, retirementwisdom.com. You'll also find a library of book summaries, best books on retirement, and many of them may surprise you because they're not specifically about retirement, but they include lessons and principles you can use in your life after you graduate from the world of full-time work. The mission of this podcast is to help you retire smarter by helping you focus on the multidimensional aspect of life beyond just planning for retirement financially. Thanks for listening.